Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Crazy Libertarian. I am back and close enough to live for this Wednesday morning commute. Hope that your February is going a little less chaotic than January did, or help my God, I'll be 30 by the time that this month is over. You are listening on 88.1 FM. That is KPPPLP. That's KPPPLP. That call-in number is 701-566-0917. That call-in number, once again, 701-566-0917. You know, folks, we have a really awesome show today. We're going to be talking about, in case you might have heard by now, we have a little bit of a election discrepancy in Iowa. This time it's coming from the Democrats, which is a little bit weird. We have some app stuff. It's kind of like Florida all over again, except it's way colder and all of the candidates are somehow just as awful. Maybe you can get the Supreme Court involved and, oh wait, that would turn out horribly too. But anyhow, we have a lot to talk about. You're not going to want to go away. This is the Crazy Libertarian. Do not touch that dial. Hey there, folks. This is Bradley Foster, the Crazy Libertarian, welcoming you back. Now, we've got a lot to cover. A lot of stuff has happened this week. It's really weird that the week that I missed, we had a lot of, horrible tragedies that happened, right? We had the Kobe Bryant thing. We had some other stuff that took up all kinds of news. And then all of that reset within the last, 72 hours. So we've got a lot to cover, but trust me, folks, we'll get through it. I would like to take this opportunity to say that this is, in fact, a shirt that says drugs, sex, drugs, and robots, because, for the record, this might just come up later, none of what other people do with them should really be none of your business. So, let's kind of start off the top here, because like I said, whole lot of stuff. And I want to talk about this coronavirus. We're going to get into the Democratic stuff in a minute, but I feel like this might deserve a little, I don't know, thoughts on the matter, right? So, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that we have this weird virus that's come out of Wuhan, China. I'm probably butchering that name, but, you know, I live in Fargo, North Dakota, so I think that I get a little bit of a pass there. So, it allegedly came from, an animal market, and there's rumors that it came out of some type of a bio lab. What we do know is it's a new type of virus. There have been hundreds of confirmed deaths in China, thousands of confirmed cases. We have cases internationally. We have people that have died internationally. It seems to have mostly spread throughout the East Asia area. However, we had one scare in Fargo, North Dakota that later tested to be negative. We had a couple scares in Minneapolis. So it's definitely something of concern. But the first thing I want to talk about is that I'm gonna make you a little more afraid and then a lot less afraid. So first off, the numbers out of China, thousands infected, hundreds dead. Probably, I don't know if I can say this on the air, you'll have to censor this. Probably total. And the reason that I really want to emphasize that is because, folks, this is the Chinese government. They mishandled SARS, they're lying about what they're doing in Hong Kong, they're lying about what they're doing to the Uyghurs and in Western China. They're doing a lot of things. Lying is right up their alley. So, folks, don't buy for a minute that only thousands have been infected. I'm personally willing to bet that whatever numbers they're putting out are down by a factor of at least 10 to 100. I'm willing to bet that thousands have died and they either don't have the resources or whatever to track it, or they're too afraid. Like I said, the Chinese government values stability above all else. The Chinese government also does, in the name of socialism, is continually throws the poor under the bus in order for them to chase some weird dream or reincarnation of an empire. Whatever it is for the Chinese, their so-called socialist leaders love nothing more than just kind of killing the poor and throwing them under the bus. However, I really want to ask everyone to kind of calm the hell down for a little bit about it. Because seriously, we've seen some borderline apocalyptic predictions, right? See people saying it was it's going to kill millions, and that it's some new Spanish flu and all that stuff, and that it's just so horrible. But we all really need to kind of take a breath on the matter, because do you know it's killed way more people in America, over 20,000 so far this year, and infected millions? The flu. Do you know what killed more people last year in the Vietnam War? Drug overdoses. Do you know what kills more people it's killed more people in America in the last year, certainly, than this coronavirus probably ever will. Slipping in the bathtub. So let's kind of take a minute and assess the risks here, you know what I mean? Because for every person that dies from the coronavirus that gets 80 million reports written about them and ends up in the New York Times, you have tons of other people, some of whom are young and healthy, like yours included, knock on wood, that have died from the flu, that have died from overdoses. I mean, you have people that are going out and, like, because of the horrors of prohibition, you even have people that have managed to unfortunately buy marijuana that's been laced with stuff and that have died very young as a result. And we don't really talk about that in the same context, right? And here's the thing, I've dragged on and on about that, I'm not going to beat that dead horse too much longer here, but I just really want to take a second to say, like, hey, it's probably not the end of the world. We've seen worse. Furthermore, it's one of those things, like, I don't know, that you can kind of combat by general hygiene, washing your hands, all that good stuff. So, like, maybe if you're stocking up on, like, bottled water and canned foods and medical supplies, maybe hold off on that for a little bit. And let's just really try and remember the locus of risk, right? Because as we've said multiple times on this show, the biggest problems are not actually the problems that come about. They are the solutions that the government puts in place to combat that problem. And folks, I've seen how the government has tried to fight the war on terror, resulting in more terror. I've seen how they've tried to fight the war on drugs, resulting in more and more potent drugs getting into this country. Dear God, let's not let them start a war on the coronavirus, because holy crap, I really don't want to aid the coronavirus any more than it needs to. We already allegedly have the Chinese government in on it. Let's not get the American government involved too much either. Let's take a breath, assess the situation, and maybe be a little bit more worried about the flu. Folks, wash your hands. It'll be fine. So now that we have that obligatory calm the hell down message out, I kind of want to move into something that's very, very recent, very, very relevant, and all of you are probably aware of. So as you know, we had this little event in Iowa called the Iowa Caucus for the Democrats. The Republicans also had one, but I'm pretty sure you can guess who won that pretty overwhelmingly. But so the Iowa Caucus, right? And mind you, this is after the Democrats have been talking for months about things like election integrity and making sure there's no hackers and talking about the process and democracy, blah, blah, blah. Well, it is currently 4:30 p.m. Central Time on February the 4th, a Tuesday, and we just recently got some of the results back. Looks like Buttigieg won, Bernie came in a close second, followed by Elizabeth Warren, then Biden. Klobuchar came in a very respectable fifth with around 12.5% of the vote, and then as of the time of this recording, the only candidate that even got 1% was, of course, Andrew Yang, who is, of course, the only one of the candidates that I just mentioned that gets any of the concepts on the shirt. So, yeah, bad times again. Tulsi didn't get anything, but she still took out Kamala Harris, so that's a start. But I really want to kind of tear into this whole Democratic primary thing, right? Because there's a lot going on here. So it was initially, they said that they wanted to make it fair, and they had this new system of doing things that had, they collected 3 data points instead of just 1 data point, and it was organized through this app, and it was supposed to make it so clear and so efficient and all that stuff. However, we've had reports of, like, caucus chairmen on the phone for hours at a time trying to report results, being put on hold, being hung up. We have reports of the app not working. We have a ton of stuff going on here. And also, what's interesting is that, do you know who made a donation? So the company that runs this app is called Shadow something, and who is actually very, very in bed with them, at least in the past, it looks like, as we're starting to kind of learn, is actually Pete Buttigieg, who also happened to come out number one in this particular primary, or caucus, or whatever the hell the Iowa is. Which makes sense. He's a, you know, moderate, small-town, Midwestern mayor. I'm not saying that he doesn't have a certain appeal, but I am saying that it's just a tiny bit questionable. You know what I mean? And I'll come back to this whole Democratic primary farce, beat up on it a little bit. I mean, obviously most of the people have some ideas that, to me, on this show are pretty awful. But I just really, really kind of want to focus back in on the fact that this has been so delayed, the process has been so torn up, and yet I'm willing to bet that the Democratic Party is going to lecture the rest of America on how much democracy and the process and all that stuff matters. And it's not that it doesn't. It's just that we might want to take a moment to analyze who this is really coming from. Because this is the party that screwed Bernie over in 2016. This is the party that just changed their rules a couple of weeks ago so that the individual donor requirement was no longer a prereq to get in the debates and stuff, specifically to make room for one guy that I want to focus on for a little bit here, named Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City. He's way more popular than the current mayor of New York City, but I think that I would poll better if you were to ask New York residents than Bill de Blasio, so that's not a very high bar to reach. But Bloomberg is like, he's sort of like a richer and more out there version of Joe Biden, right? He's a moderate, he claims that he's all about capitalism and all that good stuff. He did a horrible Super Bowl ad, if you were unfortunate enough to watch that monstrosity where he pushed for gun control. So he's pretty much like a mixture of Donald Trump with like Joe Biden and a weird, weird focus on gun control in there, right? And by the way, once again, why is it always the rich, well-connected billionaires that are pushing to take away the average people's guns? That seems a little bit weird. I'd also like to make note that Michael Bloomberg said that legalizing marijuana would be one of the stupidest things that we could do. So he's a very big prohibitionist. So he's very against those that die by gun violence, unless they happen to have a plan and then the police overreact and then kill them on the spot. Apparently those are, you know, different risks that he's willing to take. But the reason that I want to focus on this Michael Bloomberg guy is that, like I said, they literally changed the rules just for him. Now, is this because he's well-connected and they were worried about someone like Bernie winning the nomination and they knew that creepy Joe Biden, who apparently likes to, I don't know if you folks have seen this picture, but I don't know. He has some weird family intimacy, if I can call it that. It's a picture where he kissed his granddaughter on the mouth. Joe Biden has a lot of weird things going on. He has a lot of unfortunate quirks and stuff like that. I don't want to make any accusations in this whole era. But, you know, he was a very well-connected politician who was somewhat close to people like Epstein and all that stuff just being establishment. And we have pictures of him acting inappropriate around women of all ages. I can see why the moderate Democrats might have been a little flustered. But what does it say about the Democratic Party as a whole right now that these are the two directions they're going in? You have one group that is so firmly, you know, the squatters, and they're obviously torn between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, right? It's kind of a toss-up between which way they go. Bernie's a little more out there as a radical, but they're both very, very progressive, both very about things like canceling student debt and all that other progressive stuff, right? Free healthcare for all, blah, blah, blah. Making the process, as they say, more democratic, bringing more common people into it, and making sure that average people actually get looked at in America, which is what they claim. But it's very interesting that that exact cohort of people is trying to organize against a much better, more well-connected wing of the party, a wing of the party that is much better financially off, and a wing of the party that is very okay with rigging the rules for their own benefit. And what I want to bring up here is kind of the absurdity of this whole process, right? Because let me tell you what's going to happen either way. Assuming that someone like Joe Biden or, you know, maybe Bloomberg he's making a big push, and the reason you didn't hear me say his name in Iowa or anything like that is he's not even focusing on early states. He's focusing on places like New York and California, Michigan, the states with the big delegate totals. He's willing to bet that he can make a late push and sweep everyone else out of the way. So let's say that Bloomberg or Biden wins. And let's say that all these progressives that were so hunky-dory on legalizing marijuana, ending the war on drugs, ending private prisons, bringing real democracy back to America, right? What are they going to do? They're left with two options. They can either vote for some third party or maybe write in Bernie, more power to him. But what's more likely going to happen is in the name of beating Trump, they're going to vote for someone that is objectively almost, if not just as bad as Trump on all of the major records. They're going to go ahead, swallow their pride, and vote for someone like Joe Biden, who won't address the drug war, or probably ramp it up, actually. He was one of the biggest reasons for some of the horrible mandatory minimum laws we have today in the 90s with the crime bill and all of that good stuff. He's someone that is, I mean, and I say this as a libertarian who has a little bit of love for the progressive left, not on economic matters, but, you know, I get him. But that would be like asking me after Ron Paul felt, let's say I could vote in 2012, right? That'd be like asking me after Ron Paul dropped out to go and support Mitt Romney. So I just really kind of want to focus on how this system really isn't working and how, for lack of a better term, it just seems rather bizarre that the Democratic left on the, especially these progressives, are placing all of their eggs into helping the average people into this basket that's obviously already kind of rigged against them, right? And so I really just want you all to remember this little lesson that we're learning, right? The Democrats complained for like a year and a half about how Trump was so awful and they need progressives, real change, blah, blah, blah. And then they rigged the rules to let another billionaire old white dude from New York, nonetheless, that's real diverse, take over the primaries in order to beat him out. Doesn't seem like there's a real genuine care for the common person. And furthermore, it seems like those that are running on the genuine care for the common person angle, it seems like this is all kind of foreseeable, you know what I mean? Like, I probably could have predicted that something like this would have happened. Of course Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren must have known that this was going to happen. And maybe they have some great strategy to beat off Michael Bloomberg, right? Maybe they do. I don't know. I haven't been in the meetings. They haven't given me a call. But what I do know is that it seems awfully, awfully disingenuous to get so many people riled up in favor of something that A, has so little chance of happening, and that B, will probably ultimately, given what they've said, that they'll probably back the Democrat and, you know, we need to beat Trump no matter what, blah, 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 will totally lead to results and policies that are the opposite of what all these people went out and spent so much time and effort going after. Like I said, it's not like I support any democratically socialist policies, right? I think I've dismantled quite a few of them on this show. But we need to focus on the fact that these people are being systematically duped, and it kind of feels like the warriors of the progressive left, the Elizabeth Warrens, the Bernie Sanders, like they kind of knew that this was going to happen. And that's a little bit weird. So I just really wanted to bring up that not only is this two-party system not working for America, it's not even working for the people that are trying to save half of the two-party system and the only people that are actually keeping the Democrats alive with younger voters and all that stuff. So I just wanted to bring that up. We're going to take a little break here, and then I will be right back. Hey there, folks. We decided to change it up on you a little bit and play a couple songs today because even I get sick of my own voice after a certain extent. You know, we're talking about Michael Bloomberg. We're talking about the Democrats trying to save the poor. And so I just wanted to leave this song to kind of float around out there for a little bit. This is Kill the Poor by the Dead Kennedys. And you know what? Sounds exactly like what the moderate left are lining everyone else up for. So, without further ado, Kill the Poor by the Dead Kennedys.
If efficiency and progress is ours once more, now that we have a neutron bomb, it's nice and quick and clean and gets things done. Away with the sense and know me. Valued our property. The sense in war, the perfect sense at home. The sun beats down on a brand new day. No more will we tax the pay. It's like the villains gonna be flashing a light. Godless millions whisked away. At last we have more room to play. Our systems go. Kill the poor tonight. Gotta kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor tonight. The sparkle of champagne. The crime rate's gone to free again. A life's a breeze if you miss it in white.
on the screen today. Convince the liberals it's okay. So let's get dusted and sweaty tonight. Oh, well, let's kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor tonight. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor tonight. You cried, it's time to bully again. A life's a breeze if you was really right. Jim Vander on the screen today. Convince the liberals it's okay. So let's get tested and swear tonight. Oh, well, they kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor tonight. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor tonight. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor. Kill, 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 kill the poor tonight.
All right, and once again, for the second time, we are back on, folks. To those of you on the Facebook live stream, I hope that the break from my voice was needed and worth it. And you know, I really want to kind of jump right into this whole, I want to get a little more into this whole Democratic split thing, because I think that it actually is very, very, very telling about kind of the mindset of what's going on, right? Because we've talked about the people being duped, but it almost feels like the higher-ups on the Democratic left already kind of had this game plan in action. You know, you let the progressive left fire up all your grassroots activists, fire up that we need to fight the fight, blah, 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 completely turn it against them and then be willing to bet, essentially, that the 2016 strategy, which is, of course, where Bernie Sanders not only took a fall, but then went up to swing for Hillary Clinton, would work again. And that just seems so manipulative and so, I almost want to use the word small-headed, or just so arrogant. And objectively, it seems like it's working. Now, with this, I also kind of want to talk about the something that's going to be a little uncomfortable for some of you on this show. And it's this. I think that the Democrats, especially on the progressive left, have really, really, really underestimated what their party looks like. Because I'm willing to bet that the very vocal part of their party, those in, I don't know, places like California, have been very, very, very big on, like, you know, LGBTQ rights are, like, not only the centerpiece, but it's almost moved on from, like, a lot of what the LGBTQ struggle was over the last 40 years. Like, in the last 5 to 10 years, it's taken on almost a completely different face publicly, and their concerns have been totally, totally, like, we've advanced well beyond just gay marriage, right? Even in the Republican Party, they're like, yeah, gay marriage is totally fine. So I want to bring attention to a video that's circulating in Iowa, and it was of a Buttigieg supporter who was talking to a Buttigieg staffer who was completely unaware and rather rattled by the fact that Mayor Pete is gay. Now, I want to talk about a couple little tidbits here. First off, by this woman's reaction, she was obviously not pleased with it, which kind of implies that even those that are very involved in the Democratic Party are both not as involved with the whole social campaign as the other Democrats might like to think that they are, and in fact, that they're rather uninformed. So let's start with the first half of that little thought. Because we've heard so much from the progressive left, especially as they pander to people in California, New York, all of that good stuff, I feel like a lot of what we might call the old blue dog Democrats, which a lot of people have left for dead, are actually still hanging out there. And furthermore, I would like to argue that a lot of people that will be voting Democrats are people that that maybe even would have supported Trump were it not for how he acts towards, you know, how he treats women and all of his, some of his rude comments and all that other stuff, and obviously his tariffs haven't helped. What I really kind of want to bring up there is that maybe the Democratic Party is not who we thought they were. Maybe those that are very invested in the democratic process are not as uniform in certain beliefs as both us and the Democratic Party have been led to believe. Now, what does that imply? It implies that maybe someone like Bloomberg or Biden has a much better chance than we thought that they did. But it also might imply that the Democrats have been really, really, really off in their social messaging. And if that is in fact the case, and I'd just like to bring this up there and kind of see how right I am, it implies a lot of kind of scary things for the progressive left. Because if someone who is invested enough in the Democratic primary, or in the Democratic causes, to be an ardent supporter of Pete Buttigieg, doesn't know that a very public fact that he's, you know, married to a man, we also have a voter information issue going about here. Because if you don't know something basic like that, why are you voting in the caucus in the first place? It seems like, you know, if you Google Pete Buttigieg, that's literally one of the first things that comes up, right? You know, it says who he's married to on his Wikipedia page. You can pull it up right now. I don't know the guy's name. I'm sure that they have a happy and healthy relationship. But my point being, this whole caucus system, especially with how the Democrats are doing it now, where they want it to be grassroots and they totally don't want any, you know, big money coming in and all that stuff, allegedly. It kind of seems like maybe they've got a little bit of either a buy-in problem or something going on here. But at the end of the day, these voters are not who they thought they were, and they may not be as informed as they thought they were. I want to talk about that inform concept for just a minute more here, folks. Because really, if voters in the caucus are so blind as to that singular fact, what else don't they know about? Seriously, are they just here for, like, buzzwords and, you know, certain things like that? Are they just responding to one or two mailers? What is it? Because either way, it shows that there's something askew in the Democratic Party right now, especially in the primaries. And as it plays out, we're going to learn a lot about who the Democrats are. And what the Democrats should be scared of is if the progressives wake up tomorrow and realize that they're not who they thought they were, then we might see some very interesting results in the 2020 general. But I also want to go back to this central divide in the Democratic Party. And I'm sure that I'll have guests on at some point that can speak to this way more accurately than I can, but it sure seems that this whole moderate and progressive split is, not only is it taken over the Democratic Party, it is, in effect, the issue right now, right? None of the other stuff, gun control, free college, healthcare for all, any of that hullabaloo matters as much as this. And what's really interesting about it, and so, so critical to me, is that the Democratic Party is kind of, even though it's so obviously central, just kind of skating by it, right? They're going all in on this Trump being the enemy thing, being essentially what saves them in 2020. But what if it doesn't? And furthermore, what if the split is so bad and so real that people either go third party or what have you? We don't really know where it could lead, right? But let me offer a little bit of a, let me offer maybe a prediction, if you will. Now, there's been a big line of thought amongst those on the right that some of what led to Donald Trump's rise were a bunch of disenfranchised people after 2008 and 2012 when Ron Paul got the crap kicked out of him. The theory is that a lot of those Tea Partiers either grew disillusioned or were just contrarians, and then when Trump came up spouting some similar ideas, right? Like, Trump was actually pretty supportive of Ron Paul during 2012. You can check the tweets, actually. And Donald Trump actually had a lot of similar-sounding ideas at first. I mean, if you go back and watch the Republican debates from 2016, Ron Paul just kind of parrots whatever Rand Paul said in the last debate. It's really weird. So what could happen if the Democrats misplay this? Is there an opportunity that we could see someone just as awful as Donald Trump and repulsive and just so out there? Because Donald Trump running in 2000, and like, if you were to ask Republicans in 2012 and just show them like clips of 2016 of Donald Trump, most of them would say, oh, hell no, I'll never vote for that guy. He's so out there, is blah, 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 right? And yet it happened. Some say is a direct consequence of the Republicans acting so party-centered in 2012. Essentially, they made it an all-or-nothing deal where it was the party or them, and Donald Trump figured out a way to totally overwork the system that they put in place specifically to stop someone like Donald Trump. So let's say the year is 2024. No, let's say for some weird reason, like, I don't know, the Democrats are screwing up the essence of their electoral promises, or they're electing another rich billionaire that can't identify, or I don't know, something ridiculous like an app maybe screwing up their whole process. Something that a real respectable party would never let have happen to them. But let's say somehow that Donald Trump, who I could probably beat on a head-to-head ballot, wins in 2020. Let's say that a lot of these disenfranchised Democrats are no longer quite as committed to the whole democratic socialist thing, but they still have the general anti-establishment vibe going for them. I don't know who the worst person on the Democratic left is now. He might not even be on the Democratic left at the moment. I mean, Donald Trump was a Democrat well into the 1990s. But let's say someone truly, truly, I don't want to use the word evil, but abhorrent to the Democrats steps up. And let's say they can really run it. What kind of Democratic Party might we be looking at in 2024? And the answer is that, to be honest, we just don't know. And that uncertainty should really, really give a lot on the left, no matter if they're progressives, no matter if they're moderates, a very great deal of pause. Because might the Republicans have behaved differently in 2012 if they could have seen and predicted the rise of Donald Trump in 2016? I'm almost certainly willing to bet that they would. I mean, one of the last people that's, like, still dying on this anti-Trump hill is, of course, the guy that might be responsible for getting Donald Trump elected in 2016 inadvertently, and that would be Mitt Romney. So I really want to urge them to take pause, because we've seen what can happen when a large part of your party tries to tell you something, and then you say that you don't care about them. You open the door for people to say these people don't care, but I do. You open the door to even more demagoguery. And I know that the left is cool with demagoguery. That's all that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren do, right? They go out and, I mean, if you listen to like a Bernie Sanders stump speech and a Donald Trump stump speech, and I know that they speak at two totally different levels, but if you really break it down, it's kind of the same thing. The elites don't care about you. Trade is screwing you. I will fight for the average man. So if the Democrats get someone really awful in 2016, or in 2024, excuse me, who then goes on to get the campaign parroting a bunch of this progressive nonsense, and then turns out to, let's say, pulls a Donald Trump, right? Because there are a lot of people on the right that are very, very pissed, myself included. Don't know if I'd call myself on the right, but on the issues that I care about on the right, at what Donald Trump has done. Donald Trump ran on not raising the debt. He ran on very strong protections for the Second Amendment. He ran on things like, you know, being so huge in the free speech and all that other stuff. And he's enacted more gun control than Obama did. He's blown up the deficit. He's wrecked trade. He's made our farmers poor. He's done all the things that he said he wasn't going to. Which, once again, should make it pretty easy for the Democratic Party to win those voters back in 2020. But that might not happen. So the outcome for the Democrats could be this. They might ultimately, by winning the battle in 2020 and getting whoever their preferred person is, maybe it's Michael Bloomberg, maybe it's Joe Biden, maybe after a really long and contentious and drawn-out thing that pisses off half the party, it's someone like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. But either way, it seems to me that they're heading for this point where half of the party is really going to feel like the other half of the party is no longer, in fact, their party. And that opens all kinds of weird and crazy doors. And so I just want to take this moment to really consider what happens if someone wins who goes to talk about economic populism, but all of a sudden decides that maybe something like LGBTQ rights aren't really that important to him, Or maybe he decides that, you know, we're going to fix that college thing, but we're really going to crack down on immigration, which is actually something that Bernie Sanders has proposed, although not quite as crazily as Donald Trump has enforced it. So I just really, really, really want to emphasize to those of you that are considering voting for some of the people on the left or very, very, very anti-Trump, don't fall into the same traps. And for the rest of us who would never vote for these people in the first place, we really need to consider where they're going with all of this. Because the fact of the matter is, folks, if this horrible outcome happens, and if we end up getting someone who is just elected despite the elites of the party, we might have a completely different looking Democratic Party in 2024. Will that be a good thing? Will that be a bad thing? I do not know. But it sure seems to me like we've already hit the point in this country where policies don't matter, rhetoric does. And if that really continues to advance, then we might be in some very weird, very out there territory. Because if politicians, and they've already been breaking promises for like, I don't know, since about 1776, I think politicians in this country have been breaking their promises. Still a little bit mad about the whole Whiskey Rebellion thing, Washington. You're still wrong on that. I will die on that hill that's over 200 years old. But I'd really, really like to center back on is if none of this really matters in the first place, then why are we letting so much of our lives be wrapped up in it? Seriously. The politicians don't even bother to pretend like they're going to follow through, right? Donald Trump said he'd eliminate the national debt in 8 years. We're adding $1 trillion plus to the deficit annually, and we probably will at this point, unless some horrible, until the bottom falls out, for the rest of my adult life. And if this stuff really, really, truly doesn't matter to them, then why does it matter so much to us? You know, how is it in this country that we can totally be aware that, first off, the parties don't care about us, the system is rigged against us, the billionaires and millionaires are buying it out as we speak. Like we said, Michael Bloomberg just kind of bought his way into the whole Democratic primary, right? They skewed the thing that kept a lot of lower candidates off the stage in the first few debates just to open the door to another multi-billionaire rich white dude. So if we get to that point, and in fact we already are at that point, then why on earth is it also that we have more people screaming for the government to regulate speech on social networks? We have more people screaming for the government to get involved in healthcare and education and all of this stuff, despite the fact that their priorities are rapidly changing and only focus on getting elected, and the fact that their follow-through has been horrible in the past. There's a certain cognitive dissonance going on here. There's only so long that you can continually getting beat by your parents before you while at the same time anticipating that they're going to like help pay for your college. You know what I mean? This is at the very least not a healthy dynamic that we're having. And the larger conversation continues to be missed because the point of this country initially was so that things like this would be really prevented and diluted by the whole theory of federalism, right? The theory was that if you really wanted to run a state in a really crazy left way or right way or a federalist or anti-federalist way, whatever the debates were in the late 18th century, then you could do it in your own state. But by centralizing power and kicking the can and passing the buck, which is all that Congress and many state governments have done over the last 100 years, right? How much fight was put up by state governments over this raising the smoking age at 21 thing? Zero. How much fight was put up by state governments over a lot of this? As a matter of fact, the only fight that the state governments are putting up are the gun control regulation in sanctuary cities. But other than that, how much of the states really stood up for their rights under the 10th Amendment? Not a whole lot. And when they have, it's been because of an executive change by the incoming president, right? A lot of the states' rights stuff is totally dependent on who's in office and their particular interpretation of the laws. And so what you have is like this really rapidly changing rudderless national policy where nothing matters except getting elected. I don't think I have to tell you too much that not only is that a very, very, very terrifying place to be, that's a place where we're really not a democracy anymore. We're really not a republic anymore. We're really not if you will, a rule-by-law country anymore. Because if all of this stuff can just kind of go away and change depending on who is in the White House, then a lot of the laws that we pass don't really matter. I mean, even long-standing things in the Senate, like the filibuster for judicial appointments, have fallen away in the last 10 years. So a lot of the checks that we have on the other forms of government have really been ceded to the executive branch for the sake of political expediency. And it's so wild that we continue to do that. We're doing that as we speak, right? Like, despite all the bombs are dropping in Yemen and in Syria and all that stuff, and all of the hullabaloo about what we're doing in Iran, we still haven't seen a full congressional vote on the matter. People in both parties seem to be rather content to kick a lot of the big important issues off to the executive branch. And so I really, really want to kind of close out once again on this thought. Not only is the government broken, actually I'd argue that the government's not broken, it's working exactly as it should. Unfortunately, the way that it's designed to operate in the current climate is to centralize power at the top and make getting reelected and therefore getting more of that sweet, 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 sweet government money to your own particular interests is now, in fact, the American way of doing business. So, I don't have all the answers on my program. I don't have all of the exact critiques. I don't know exactly how we get our way out of the situation. But I can tell you this. If you're really putting your faith in either Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden or Michael freaking Bloomberg to save your life, to make the country better, what really are you hoping for? Are you hoping that they'll follow through on their promises? Are you hoping that everyone that they're working with will follow through on their promises and you won't have a ton of like leaks coming out and stuff divisive to the administration? Are you hoping that your party stays in power for a while to put in the long-acting change? Are you hoping that your party stands for what it says it stands for? Because at the end of the day, it seems like people really don't know anymore. And so, if you don't know the expected outcome, I really, really, really would encourage people to maybe take a step back. Maybe the answer doesn't lie in the federal government doing more for us. Maybe the answer doesn't rely on who's in the White House. Maybe the answer lies on local change. Maybe the answer lies on voluntary change. Maybe the answer lies in simple human decency that's not so clouded by visions of power and wealth and all of that connectedness. Maybe what it really comes down to is instead of arguing about how we can make college free for everyone, maybe we should take a look at our economy and see what we can encourage high school students to do other than taking out lifetimes of student loan debt to get something worthless like, I don't know, a political science degree. Still a little bit salty. But nonetheless, we really need to examine what we're doing here, because not only does the current system not work, it is so obviously twisted. And if you think for a second that Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Michael Bloomberg is going to fix your problems, is going to make your life better, you've got a very, very bad surprise coming to you in 2021, because the only person that can fix your life is you. And as a matter of fact, even if it's not you, the only people that can really directly make sure that you get taken care of are those closest to you, your friends, your family, those in your community. Because the politicians clearly don't care. They just want to drop more bombs, get more campaign contributions, and stay in power longer. And folks, that may not be what this country was founded on, but that sure is what it's about today. So the next time you get a little political flyer, the next time you hear about all these really important debates in the Democratic Party, just remember that for the most part, the politicians have not only not done what they say they were going to do, but they have, in fact, done the opposite. So please, once again, let's look for more of a local solution and stop praising these big, strong, all-knowing people to solve our problems. Because like I said, Michael Bloomberg doesn't care about you, Bernie Sanders doesn't care about you, your friends and family and community do care about you. So let's start looking for solutions there. This has been the Crazy Libertarian. I hope you've enjoyed. Hey there, folks. Back once again. Here is your second song of the day, because, you know, I like to change things up every once in a while. And we've been talking a lot about rich, well-connected Democrats, right? Bloomberg's gotten a lot of attention. Biden's got a lot of attention. And how they really want to save the world until they don't. That made me think of this classic punk song. I know that I played a song by them earlier, but I'm a pretty big fan of the Dead Kennedys, pun intended. And that is California Uber Alleys. And I was actually written about Governor Jerry Brown back in the 80s, who is, of course, somehow still the governor of California today. So I thought that it was really, really fitting with Bloomberg spending so much time parading to the California liberals. I thought that maybe we needed a moment to get kind of a punk understanding of all these people that claim that they want to help everyone and make the world so much better, when all they really want to do is make it their own particular brand of personally rich, enriching authoritarianism. So without further ado, California Uber Alles by the Dead Kennedys.
Police, they have come for your uncle.